Oh, is that the thing that's recording me, huh? Or Zoom? Oh, cool. All right. Hey, I'm John. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date's October 22nd of 2007. I have a sponsor. I don't have any sponsees at the moment. I do, but like they're all guys that have been sober for a while, so they don't call me very often. But I've sponsored guys in my time in sobriety, and I have several guys now who, you know, I sponsored them when they came in, and we still, you know, like they still call me. And my actually about two, everything kind of blends together. But like 3 years ago, 4 years ago, I was like the best man in one of my sponsee's weddings. You know, like the first one that ever like stayed sober. He's still sober today. Him, his kid, and my kid are like best buds. It's really cool. And the reason I say all that is like, even I was talking to Bill before the meeting, and my life has felt very like not smooth the last few years. And like, there was COVID, and then we had a kid, which is like the most amazing thing in the world. And like life has been like super good, but also it's been like super, lots of changes, lots of things have changed. And if you have kids, you know, like I had like a little newborn, and then he was a 1 year old, and then he was walking, and then like now he's talking, and now he's like got opinions, and it's like very, lots of stuff going on, and it's awesome, but it's definitely different, you know. And you know, like AA can stop being the priority, you know. AA can stop being the thing that like is the thing that fixes me. And it takes me walking into a room like this and realizing, like, no, this is it, you know. Like everything else is important. Like I need, obviously, like I didn't get sober to just like be a monk or whatever. I got sober to go live life, and the rest of living life is very important. But like, if I don't have this, if I don't have this base here, I don't last, you know. And it was cool. I told Isaac when I walked up, I didn't recognize anybody outside, and I was like, dude, this is so like, you know, like I can do this thing. I'm very selfish and self-centered. I'm sure none of you can relate, but like, the world kind of like exists in my head, right? And if like you aren't in my head, like you don't exist, you know? And so like AA is, sometimes AA can be like the people I met when I was like 5 years sober, you know? And that like, oh, like that's what AA is. And then I come to a meeting like this and I see a bunch of people that are just like getting sober and living life and like doing the deal. And I remember like, oh wow, like there's a lot going on here, you know? And it's a beautiful, amazing thing. And so I was thinking about what I was going to talk about, because Marlon asked me last week, around the beginning of the week, if I could speak on the 30th, and it was my son's birthday, so I couldn't. But I told him I'd speak today. And I was like, man, what am I going to talk about? And I waited until I got in here to figure it out, which I'm sure none of you guys can relate to. And I pulled up the daily reflection for today, so I wanted to read that. So it's titled True Ambition, and this is from the 12 and 12 124 to 25. True ambition is not what we thought it was. True ambition is the deep desire to live usefully and walk humbly under the grace of God. And I'm not going to read this whole thing, but the long and short of it is, you know, what the person talks about in the reflection, and like what was definitely my thing was, before I got sober, and even today, a lot of what I do is thinking about what you think about me and making sure that, like, because before I got sober, it was very important for you to like me, because then you would give me the things I needed, right? Whether that be alcohol specifically, or you know, sympathy or love or care or whatever that is. Because like, you know, poor John, he just can't stop drinking, or poor John, that the girl left him, or poor, you know, whatever the thing was. And I still do the same thing today, right? Like at work, I'm, you know, I want to be like, well, poor John, he's got too much to do, or poor John, he had this happen in his life, or poor John, whatever. And like, the reality is like all the sympathy and all the people caring about me in the world isn't what fixes me, right? It's important. It's like something I need. Like I need people in my life that care about me. I need love. I need all that good stuff. But the thing that fixes me, right, the thing that took the kid who walked in here and made him into, like, you know, some sort of man, I guess I am today or whatever, is that I came to AA and people told me what to do, and I found a God of my understanding, and that God of my understanding is what keeps me sober and, like, changed me. And the way I found that God of my understanding was, like I said, I came in here and people told me what to do and I did it. And it's like, it's really that simple, you know, for me. Now, I'd be lying to you if I said that's what I still do today. You know, I wake up in the morning and I'm like, all right, I got to figure this out. And I got to figure this out. And I got to figure this out. And I got to do this. And I very rarely think, oh, I should call and ask what I should do before I do this. Or I should talk to this person about what I should do. Or I should ask for help in this area. I very rarely do that. And when I don't do that, things tend to work out less well than when I call and I say, hey, I need help. Hey, this is what's going on with me. This is what I need. So all of that intro is to say that, like, I am a very imperfect person, right? Despite what Marlon might think, you know. I picked Marlon up. So okay. So I want to tell this story because I love it and it makes me happy. So this must have been like 5-6 years ago, something like that. And it was like the middle of the day and it was over the summer, and my job allows me to be on, you know, kind of a vacation over the summer. And so, like, I wasn't doing anything particular, and this guy calls me and he's like, hey, I'm stuck at the airport and Uber and Lyft can't, like, I'm not allowed on Uber and Lyft anymore, and so I can't get home. And so I'm like, all right. And I think I had met Mark. I definitely met him before, but, like, I didn't know him super well. And so I go pick him up and I take him home and we have this, like, great conversation. And to this day, Marlon's like, man, you're a saint, dude. And I'm just like, yeah, you caught me at a good time, dude, you know? but no, I mean, it's like, AA puts me in the position where I can do those kind of things, right? Like, so before I got here, right, I was 19 when I got sober. So there wasn't a terrible amount of time, right, in my life before I got sober. But what I had managed to do with that time up to that point was become a liability to everybody around me, right? I loved alcohol. I loved it more than anything else in the world. I thought there were other things that I loved more, but, you know, alcohol at the end of the day was the thing. I thought I really wanted to show up for you. I thought I really wanted to be a good friend. I thought I wanted to be a good partner or boyfriend or student or son or brother or whatever those things were. But when I had a drink, all of a sudden that stuff wasn't such a priority. And then the next morning, after I did whatever I did the night before, which was usually, like, piss myself, you know, argue with somebody, start crying. I did a lot of crying and peeing, honestly, was most of my drinking. Blackout, you know, cause a scene, whatever. The next morning I would think to myself, man, I'm never going to do that again. But then, you know, a couple hours would go by, 8, 9 o'clock in the morning would roll by, and I'd say, you know what, that's actually, it wasn't that bad, you know, like, maybe this time it'll be different. And then the next night I'm doing the same thing. And so that's what my drinking was like, and that's what my drinking made me into. I shouldn't say my drinking made me. I was that person, and I used alcohol to try to fix that, right? The fact that, like, I didn't feel good in my own skin. I felt like everybody in the world had figured something out that I hadn't figured out, and the only time I felt good was when I was drunk, and et cetera, et cetera. And the only drink that was better than the first drink was the next one, and the next one, and the next one. And when I started drinking, I couldn't stop, and all that good stuff. I did all of that because of the way I felt, right? And that solution worked for a short period of time until it didn't work, right? And I shouldn't say it didn't work. When I got drunk, I still felt better, but it took a little bit more to do, and the consequences got worse. So when I got to AA, that was the person I was, right? I felt horrible. I woke up every morning wanting to not be awake, you know what I mean? Begging, you know, whatever God I believed in to, like, get rid of me, you know, and, like, trying my best to drink myself into that. And when I got here, that's the person I was. And And all I really wanted was to stop the pain, right? Like, I didn't necessarily come here with the desire to, like, be surrounded by a host of friends and to find God and, like, to do all these things that, like, we do in here. And I certainly wasn't thinking about being humble and being of service to anybody. What I wanted was the pain to stop. And so I show up, and I went to a treatment center. I show up in this treatment center, and they say, you got to get a sponsor. And so I go to a meeting, and I feel horrible, and I feel like I'm super confused. It was the Friday night men's meeting, actually. It was the first, I think they took me to a meeting at Sobrenity first. And then the next one was the Friday night men's meeting. But either way, the men's meeting was where at the end they said you should go get a white chip and, you know, raise your hand or, you know, get a sponsor. And so I did those things. And when I did those things, I didn't do them because I was like, oh, man, it's really important to have someone to, like, help me figure out what I need to do for the next steps. And I didn't do it because, like, it would be really great if I could, you know, get my life together and be a good person and all this other stuff. I did it because, like, I was in horrible pain. Like, life sucked. I didn't know what to do. Like I said, like, when I wasn't drinking, I was trying to figure out how to get drunk. And when I was drinking, I couldn't stop drinking. So, like, there's not a lot of room for happiness or fulfillment in those things. So I was in horrible pain when I got here. And so since I was in horrible pain, I listened. And so I picked this guy to be my sponsor. And if you're new, welcome. If anything, take away from this is that you don't actually have to know what's going on to get sober. I picked this guy to be my sponsor because of the way his beard was. He had like a really sick, like really full beard. And at the time I was like a scruffy little 19-year-old kid and I couldn't really grow. I still, to this day, really, this is all I get. It's kind of messed up. I picked him because of that and because he raised his hand. He looked like the youngest guy in the room, you know. And so I asked this guy to be my sponsor. And he said, all right, call me every day. And I went back to my treatment center and I didn't call him. Partially because we had a payphone at the treatment center, and I didn't know how to use a payphone, and I was too scared to ask anybody how to work it because I thought I looked dumb. But all, I mean, in fairness, I was like 19, and it was 2007, and no one used payphones anyway. But whatever. The point is like that's, you know. So eventually, I did call him. He said, "Hey, do this stuff." He said, "Read the book. You know, there's this book, Alcoholics Anonymous. You're gonna read it. We're gonna talk about God and all this other stuff." And I was like, okay. So I did it. And I opened this book up and I read the stuff he told me to read. And I read the 12 and 12 too. And he was like, all right, I want you to write what you understand about it. So I'm a good little college kid. So I'm writing my little essay about the steps. I, to this day, couldn't tell you what I wrote. I have no idea. And I don't think I knew what I was writing at the time. But we sat down together with that book in front of us and we did the third step prayer together. And then he said, all right, now you need to do a four step. And he said, read this, you know, here's what the four step is. You're going to take a fearless moral inventory, talk about your resentments, talk about all these things. And it didn't really make sense, like, how those things were going to stop me from drinking, right? Like, how is telling you, like, I grew up Catholic, so, like, I was familiar with, like, the concept of confession, right? And I didn't see how, like, you know, doing confession would solve my drinking problem or whatever. So he said, you know, I didn't say any of this to him, though. I just said, okay. And I went home, and I proceeded to sit on that for, you know, 2 months or whatever. So I was like 90 days sober by the time I eventually did my four step. And the way that it happened was I really wanted to go to this New Year's party, and my sponsor said, you can't go to the New Year's party unless you do your four step. And he told my mom to not let me leave the house until I did my four step. So it was a humbling experience. I was like 20 years old. My mom's like, John, do your four step. And but whatever. That's what I did. And that's how my first four step got done. And then we sat down at Starbucks on Howard when it was still like 24 hours. Sat there and I did my fifth step and I read all this stuff to him, and looking back on it, I had like some resentments that I'm like, that was so silly, and then I have other ones that I'm like, I still kind of feel that way. But the point of it was, is like at the end of that, I like what Jeff said. He said, you know, I was supposed to feel like, you know, free or whatever. I didn't, you know, like I felt like I did something, you know, like I did this thing that I was supposed to do, but like, I didn't walk away floating from that experience. But what I did do was, he said, go home, you know, read this stuff, do this prayer, and then you're going to start working on your eighth step. And this is how you're going to do your eighth step. And so I did that. And if you're sensing a pattern here, it's like, very little of this was me like being like, oh, I understand what my higher power is now. Now I'm going to, you know, figure this out and I'm going to do this, like, and I'm going to like read these spiritual books and I'm going to, no, like that was not what my experience was in early sobriety. My experience was in early sobriety was going to meetings, following my sponsor around like a puppy, not really wanting to talk to anybody else, being scared to death of like pretty much everybody else around me, but just being willing to do the next thing, right? And I can't take credit for that willingness. That willingness was, I mean, I think today looking back on it, I know it was God guiding me, but at the time it was just willingness born out of pain, you know? And I did that next thing, and I did the next thing, and I did the next thing, and eventually I got to 10, 11, and 12. My sponsor said, you know, here's these things that you need to do. Oh, I forgot the part where we did the ninth step, and I made amends, like direct amends to people. And then there were some other amends on there that I was like, he was like, oh, here's what you should do for these. And I was like, I don't really know if I'm ready for that. And I held on to those for a while. But I didn't tell my sponsor, you know, I didn't tell him that I held on to him. I said, oh, yeah, you know, I did it. You know, I did what you told me to, whatever. And so that'll come back in a little bit. But the next thing I did was, he said, you know, here's 10, 11, and 12. Here's what you need to do. And then you need to go work with some new guys. And I felt very confused because I was like, well, I don't really know anything. So what am I going to do to help some new guy? And this dude, so during this whole time, right, like I said, I've been going to meetings. I a lot of what Jeff said, I was going to meetings every day, mostly with my sponsor because he was a guy named Greg. He's dead now, but he was amazing. He would like wait for me at his job. I'd go there at like 5 o'clock every day, and he'd drive me all over the place. We'd go to meetings all over the place, and just had a great time. And I'm going to all these meetings, and even though I'm like deathly afraid of people, and like I don't really want to get to know you, and like I don't really want to like whatever. I wanted to be a part of AA in as much as I wanted to, like, not feel like crap anymore, you know? And despite that, I made friends, right? Despite that, I made people, I met people that I was close to. And so I'm doing those things, and I'm going to meetings, and I go to Fever, the Saturday Night Fever one night, and there's this kid there who had just gotten high the day before. You know, his deal wasn't even alcohol specifically, right? But he asked me to be his sponsor, and I said okay. And I was like, you know, I told him, I gave him the same spiel that Greg gave me. You know, call me every day, do all this other stuff, read the book. And the next day he called me, said, hey man, I got high. And I was like, all right. So I called, you know, these guys who I had met in AA who had been sober longer than me, and I said, you know, I don't think I'm a very good sponsor. The guy who asked me to sponsor him got messed up the first day after I started sponsoring him. Like, I don't know. I think I broke him. I don't know what I did. And they assured me that that wasn't the case. And that dude is, he's still a person who, you know, I talk to every once in a while, He's getting by and enjoying his life. But what happened is like, I just kept doing it, right? Like, I kept showing up. My social network in AA got a little bit bigger. I started going to school. When I walked onto the campus of HCC at Ybor, there were these two dudes smoking a cigarette outside of a classroom. And there were two guys that I had met in that meeting, in that Friday night men's meeting, which was my home group at the time. And they pulled me aside and we became really close friends. They're both still sober. One of them, his name is Brian. You guys might know him. And the other guy is named Dave. He lives in Seattle and they're both sober today. And we still talk and we're still good friends. And they saved my life, man, because like I would go to school every day and we'd go out and get lunch and we'd talk about life and stuff like that. And when stuff would get hard, they were there to like help support me, you know, and I was there to help like support them to whatever extent that I could. And like we kind of just like went to meetings together and enjoyed life, you know. And that's when I remember there wasn't a specific moment, but like at some point in that experience, I stopped thinking about drinking, you know, like it just became not a thing anymore. And I remember, you know, like sitting outside of Starbucks with this guy one night, another guy from my home group, and talking about like, hey man, I don't really know if I'm like an alcoholic, you know, like, you know, I've been sober for like a year now. And like, I just did what people told me to. And like, I haven't relapsed, and like I only drank for like a very short period of time, you know, and a lot of other people have lost way more stuff than me and all this other stuff. And he basically said, like, listen, what happens when you drink? And I told him, and he said, okay, what happens when you're not drinking? And I told him, you know, when I drink, I can't stop. When I'm not drinking, I'm thinking about drinking. He's like, okay, and what's happening now? And I was like, I don't know, I'm going to AA and like my life is changing and whatever. And he's like, okay, well, I think you're in a good place, you know, like, I think you should be here. And so, you know, long story short, I stayed, you know, like, long story short, like I did that. I did what he told me to. I stuck around. And, coming here makes me remember coming to YPG a long time ago when it was like near Davis Island. It was like, I can't remember the church it was at. And then it was at, after that, it was at the place that Saturday Night Fever is, right? After that place. Thank you. And like the way that I felt when I would show up at a place like this, which is like safe. Like, I belong here. Like, no matter the fact that, like, I don't know any of these people. They all seem cooler than me. They're all, like, already friends with each other and kind of, like happy and stuff like that. Like, eventually, like, I felt that same way. Like, I felt like, oh, these are all my friends. And, like, they care about me. And, like, these are all people that I relate to. And, like, oh, there's a new guy. Like, maybe I should go talk to him because maybe, like, he wants to feel that way. You know what I mean? And, like, maybe he drank like I drank and let me talk to him about that. And that kind of the experience of the fellowship is what brought me to the experience of sponsorship, which is what keeps me involved in AA today. Like I said, I don't have a lot of sponsees, but at the moment. But recently, my life has taken an interesting turn in terms of like my kind of mental health or whatever. And wouldn't you know it, like, I go to a meeting, a guy shares about how he's having a hard time in AA, I go talk to him, I feel better. I come in this meeting, I see a guy I haven't seen in a while, we talk about AA, I feel better. Like, those things change the way I feel. And with sponsorship, like, what I want to say is that, like, you know, I with my experience of, like, feeling like I didn't really know what I was doing, and then the first guy I sponsored got high and whatever. What happened with the next guy I sponsored was, we did the first three steps, and then he left. And then the next guy I sponsored, we actually went through all the steps, and then he went to prison. And then what happened with the next guy I sponsored is we did all the steps, and then I'm the best man in his wedding. And during that whole thing, I'm staying sober, right? And during that whole thing, like, these guys are calling me, and I kind of want to do what I want to do, but I'm picking up the phone for them instead. And during this whole thing, like, I'm finishing college. I meet the woman that I end up marrying. I get like my first big boy job and like start paying taxes, you know, and I've been like gainfully employed there for a decade now, which is wild. I get gray hair, which is another thing that happens through this whole experience or whatever. But like, I grow from being this like selfish, self-centered kid who doesn't know how to stop drinking. And like today, I'm a little better, you know, I would say. And sometimes I'm a lot better. And the fact that like I can be a lot better is completely a result of being here and putting myself in the position to do things even when I don't understand why I'm supposed to be doing them or even when I don't want to do them. Because like on the face of it, like why is sitting down with a guy at a halfway house and talking about like, you know, his drinking, why is that keeping me sober? Why is taking some guy's call about like why his roommate, you know, stole his whatever, his burrito, and he's upset with him and he's like gonna, you know, go fight him or whatever. Like, why is taking that call matter, you know? You know, why does like, frankly, like why does like showing up at meetings, even though like what I really want to be doing sometimes is like just be at home and like relax a little bit because like I don't really get to do that because I have like a 3-year-old or whatever. Because by doing that stuff, that's how I stay sane and that's how I stay sober. And when I stay sane and sober, I can be of service to other people and like the whole thing kind of repeats itself. When I don't have you guys, I'm locked in my own head. And I'm thinking about myself constantly and I'm thinking about all the things that are wrong with me. And then I start thinking about all the things that are wrong with you. And then I start thinking about all the things that are wrong with the world. And then I'm at home and I don't want to get out of bed. When I show up, when people call me, when I answer the phone, man, like I feel amazing right now. Like I feel better than I felt in like weeks, you know? And the reason is because like I'm sitting here, I'm doing something that like somebody asked me to do. I'm being of service. Hopefully somebody who's sitting in here and is thinking to themselves, you know, like I don't really get AA and like, I don't really know if I'm an alcoholic because I only drank for a little bit and like I'm only 19 or I'm only this or I'm only that or I don't really understand the third step and I don't really know what my higher power is or I don't really know like you understand that like that doesn't matter at all. What matters is that you're here. That's what matters. And like the Daily Reflection talked about, true ambition is the deep desire to live usefully and walk humbly under the grace of God. Like, I feel like doing that right now. When I'm just me thinking about myself, you know, when I'm just me, like, trying to, like, think my way into right action, I don't want to be of service to God or to, you know, have true ambition, which is to be humble and all that kind of stuff. I want to just think about me and do what I want to do and mess around or whatever. When I come here and I do what you guys tell me to do, even after 16 years of being here, I'm a better husband, I'm a better father, I'm a better friend, I'm a better worker, I'm a better all those other things. And most importantly, I haven't taken a drink in 16 years. Like, that's insane. My child will never see me drunk, you know? My parents will never have to see me drunk again. My wife will never see me drunk. That's a whole part of my life that, like, no one ever has to experience. I haven't pissed myself in 16 years. So, like, that's pretty awesome. And, like, I look around this room and I see a bunch of people who, like, even if I haven't met you yet, like, I know that if, like, you know, I'm walking around and I meet you outside of AA or whatever, like, I'm connected to you, you know? Like, you're a spot that I know I can go to for safety and, like, support. Because, like, you have the same thing I do. And I really, you know, no matter what, I really want Terry's beard. And that's what I'm going to keep coming back to do. So with that, I'm going to shut up. Thank you guys so much for letting me talk.